Welcome back in. NoCo Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. Thanks for being with us here on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Joining me now, our CRP 4x4 VIP guest, it is Miles Blumhardt out of the Colorado one. Miles, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing well. Sorry, I missed a few weeks. I've been out and about, so it's good to be back with you, Tanner.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to have you back. Hopefully it was a good little break there for you. A lot been going on in northern Colorado over in the Fort Collins area. Let's talk about the floods and the mudslides and monsoons. The weather's been a little bit crazy.
Yeah, you know, we really got through spring and early summer with virtually, you know, really good moisture, but not anything to damage much. But the monsoon season, which largely hasn't had much of a showing up here the last several years, has kind of gotten back into a normal state, and those monsoons can dump quite a bit of rain in a short period of time. And when those are over those burn areas, as you see in Glenwood Canyon from the Grizzly Creek fire and up the Poudre Canyon, that's been causing some significant issues and continues to.
Right, and really, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of time before, or a whole lot of rain, I should say, before that gets in a really bad situation.
No, you know, the soil is so unstable up there, one, because in areas it can't absorb any of the water, so that water, you know, picks up the ash and the soil and sediment, and it, you know, it starts rolling, and then it starts you know, digging the soil underneath large boulders and you know, burned trees, and then that all just kind of accumulates into a funnel when it comes down these narrow drainages and like Black Hollow Creek. And it causes significant damage, and unfortunately, it's cost four people their lives.
Yeah, it was a tough week there reporting on that, and then you know the week later we start hearing all of these reports go off, our EAS systems going off, and you think, okay, here it comes again. We did get some more rain, but nothing to the severity of that first flood.
No, you know, it all depends on where it hits, and so. Yes, was there some flooding up the Poudre Canyon? Sure, but not like we had seen before. So, yes, we dodged a bullet there. But, you know, I'm working on a story now. Here's one of the things that happens, right? So there's a bridge up there just below Black Hollow called Profile Rock Bridge. And now we have a disagreement from some of the property owners up there what to do with that bridge in the county. The county yesterday tore it down to the chagrin of some of those residents up there, and now we're in a battle over, you know, who's going to pay for it and those types of things. So, you know, there's just layers and layers of this.
Yeah, it goes a lot deeper than maybe we even start to think about. And it's a shame that that's what comes to the forefront of the conversation, because right now, I mean, like you said, four people losing their life in the flooding, and, you know, there's a lot of buildings being damaged, things like that. The last thing you want to do is get into an argument.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's where we're at right now, and I'm just starting to work on that story, but it looks like, you know, kind of an ugly situation. We had our photographer go up there yesterday and talk to some of the residents, and I talked to some of the residents that are very unhappy that the county didn't give them enough time for their own engineers to get in there to try and figure out. They wanted to repair the bridge at what they would say would cost $76,000, and now that the bridge has been dismantled, the county wants that rebuilt to new specifications, which some of the residents are claiming is going to cost more than $1 million.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to watch that unfold. I'm glad I'm not right in the middle of that one.
No, that's just, you know, it's just one of those really ugly side effects of an already ugly situation up there. So it's disheartening, but you know, that's the reality we're in right now.
Yeah, I'm talking with Miles Blumhardt out of the Fort Collins, Colorado. And, you know, speaking of some of the reasons why that happened, right, why we had those flash floods, the Cameron Peak fire almost a year ago, you know, we're about a week out from the year anniversary.
Yeah, August 13th is the one-year anniversary. And, You know, I'm working on a story. I think it might even be online today. And it's really taking a look at the impact that COVID-19 had on the firefighting effort. I found one of the first firefighters to test positive while on the fire. It doesn't necessarily mean that he contracted it there, because he was at a fire in Idaho just before this. And unfortunately, it was very debilitating to him. He was in an induced coma for 39 days. He was on a ventilator for 5 weeks and 5 months of rehab. And he did make it through, but he has some lasting ailments from that. And then I take a look at the story through him, and you know how much it impacted the firefighting effort, which it did. They had to create a whole new incident management team just to deal with COVID, because you know so many firefighters were getting it, testing positive for it. There was isolation, quarantine, so a really complex situation was made even more chaotic because of COVID.
Yeah, and there wasn't a walk of life that didn't get affected by COVID last year, but that's an interesting look in there as well, because you think, you know, outside fighting those fires and you think that maybe you'd be okay, but we had so many people from so many parts of the country offering their services and trying to help that it I guess it shouldn't be of surprise.
Yeah, when you have 6,000 people coming in and out of that fire from I think 46 states in Puerto Rico. Oh, you're gonna have some issues, right? And you know it's further exacerbated by the fact that you know test results were slow, contact tracing was very difficult, trying to quarantine people and isolating them while trying to keep a significant force to fight the fire. At times, there was 8 to 20% of those on the lines that couldn't fight the fire because they were either in isolation or quarantine. So and then you look at the complexity of the fire itself with the different fits and starts from the weather. You know, I was just looking at my numbers here. 79 people tested positive fighting the fire. 13 emergency room visits, and then 3 were hospitalized. 2 of them had significant complications from it. So, and then you have 344 quarantines. So you understand just how difficult it was.
Talking with Miles Blumhardt, our CRP 4x4 VIP guest. Looking forward to that story. Is that story out now, Miles, or is it headed out here soon?
You know, I think it's supposed to go today yet. I'm just trying to work on this bridge story, so I haven't really had an opportunity to look if it's out yet. But if not, it'll be out soon. I think it runs in print on Sunday, I believe. Yeah, Sunday. But it was just a way for a different look for the one-year anniversary coming up. It was really kind of a subject that I didn't cover significantly during the fire. So.
Right.
So it was an opportunity to get into this guy's life, this firefighter's life. And and I think it really goes behind the scenes to show just how complex it was.
Yeah, really looking forward to that piece. It kind of cracked me up. We had Aaron Udell on yesterday, one of your colleagues over there at the Colorado, and asked her when a story was coming out, and she goes, you know what, I'm going to say it on the radio, so it has to be done. It'll be out this afternoon. So we're just setting deadlines here on NOCO now.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because obviously I've been, you know, in the newspaper business for over 30 years, and deadlines used to really mean something, and they still kind of do, but when the product comes out, the story comes out,
that's a whole difference.
You know, it is funny, and people look at you like, well, it's your story, and I go, yeah, but I don't say when it comes out. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Miles, first day of CSU football camp today. We're inching ever closer to college football.
Yeah, you know, I just think I look at what CSU has coming back. I look at their schedule. I think there's a lot of unknowns on that team. You know, they have some grad transfers and stuff. But to be quite honest, personally, I don't know, 3 or 4 wins is probably what I'm seeing. Could be surprising, but, you know, you got to figure out, you know, they got a good tight end in McBride, and they got a good receiver in Dante Wright. I think they got a good defensive line. I think their defense is actually probably going to be you know, pretty solid.
Right. Everything that I've been hearing out of there, their defensive line is going to be really the focal point of that defense. But I think it's going to be important. You know, hopefully how things are going, we're still able to have that stadium filled. I think that we should be able to. Now, obviously, there could be the mask mandate, all of that coming back, the hysteria with COVID coming back. But it's going to be an important year for CSU to hopefully have a good football season, but also have the attendance there when we're talking about all the conference realignment taking place.
I agree. I mean, you're looking at you know, a large Canvas Stadium payment that was deferred from last year because of COVID. So yeah, you need the fans back in there, but because of the potential ramifications of further COVID restrictions, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking a second year of no people in the stands is going to be extremely detrimental.
Yeah.
And I understand the concern, you know, the safety and the health and safety concern. But I can tell you this, it will definitely run up against financial pressures that these athletic departments are feeling. So, and then the other thing I think people might not even be realizing is, what about within the team? As you're seeing it on other teams, what about those who are going to get vaccinated,
right,
and those who don't want to get vaccinated? That brings up a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, well, the NCAA is setting up some regulations yesterday. I haven't got a chance to go through those thoroughly yet. But to your point as well, you know, when those start to run up to each other, you know, financial decisions and then, you know, health. It, to me, and maybe this is just me being simple-minded, Miles, I've been called out once or twice, but look, why not just say if you are worried about it, if you're not vaccinated, if you're worried, if you are vaccinated and you're worried, simply don't come.
I don't know. I mean, it's so polarizing and political.
Right.
I agree. You know, I'm vaccinated. I did it for quite a few reasons. One of them was actually to have, you know, freedom of movement.
Right, right.
You know, and one, obviously, I want to protect myself and I want to protect others around me. But actually, one was freedom, you know, to maybe go to a football game or to go to the airport or, well, you know, whatever it is. And so I just, again, I say this. I feel really, really, it's a really difficult situation that universities like CSU are in. And it just, I don't know how you win it. It's just such a difficult decision for them. And it seems like whatever you do, you have half saying you're wrong and half saying you're right. So
yeah, I'm glad I'm not in that chair, that decision-making process.
Me too.
Miles, thank you so much. It was great catching up with you. Unless you're on vacation next week, we'll plan on talking with you then.
Yep, I should be around. So I'll be around for a few months and we'll talk to you then.
Perfect. Thanks, Miles. That's Miles Blumhardt out of the Fort Collins, Colorado, and joining us there, CRP 4x4 VIP guest. Closing in on 9:53 now. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one. NOCO Now, presented by the J9 Agencies on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.